or not even the ideas.
I feel like that's true of so many academic disciplines.
I agree with that, but
you're
I'm
an anthropology. I've not read an anthropology paper. From
the
last
anthropology
50 years,
is
which
as masturbatory and as jargon heavy as any other discipline, you know.
But
but I'm talking about philosophy.
It's a problem of it's just a problem of academics, I think. Like everything has to be cited so much because everything has to be accounted for so much because all these universities are trying not to get sued so much. Mm-hmm. And with philosophy, I think, in terms of Wittgenstein at least, he was approaching something very aphoristically, like just kind of I don't want to say he was stoned for the whole time, but he was out there for the whole time. Like, he knew what he was doing in a very kind of, like, wayward way.
I mean, he wrote a lot of it in Norway, so what does that tell you?
I mean, I don't know. I haven't read Wittgenstein, although, like Joey, I wanted to read him this summer, but never got around to it.
You want to... Okay, you want to approach it?
But
I've only read Tractatus. I've not read Philosophical Investigations.
Yeah.
In Tractatus, he has all these aphorisms, all very short, all about language. You know what he's talking about. He's talking about language. And he says things like, the structure of a proposition should mimic the structure of the content of that proposition. And it kind of, like, strikes you, and you can kind of understand the words he's using, and then you kind of, like, put the book down, and you take it away, and you turn it over in your head, and you're thinking about it through the day, and then you're thinking about it in terms of other things, like, I don't know, the structure of a cup. The structure of a cup should be mimicking the content of... should be mimicking the structure of the content of a cup. And the content of a cup is to be able to hold liquid. So the structure of the cup mimics the fact that it's meant to hold liquid. The structure of a novel is meant to be such that it mimics the content of the novel. And oftentimes, novels mimic the fact that they're trying to represent something, like, specific. I don't know.
What I was gonna say is just, in reference to another philosopher that's, you know, considered very difficult, hard to read, is Derrida.
Okay.
Who's someone that I like a lot. And I know in relation to why he made it so complicated, was kind of like a shithead move. He wanted to make it complicated.
Yeah.
He was like, we should only make things as complicated as they are. So he has very simple ideas. For example, like the idea of play in language isn't that complex of an idea. But to explain it, you need a certain level of complexity that you can't escape. And I think he would say that would be like in terms of just our language, our structure, like the way we need to answer that. But I do agree with what Joey was saying about, like, the not necessarily about the difficulty inherent to some of these texts, but to the fact that it is, I think right now, very limited to, like, an academic sphere.
Okay,
like, I love that in the 60s you had TV shows with philosophers going at it. Like, you had the Foucault-Chomsky debates.
Yeah.
You had, like, Gore Vidal, who wasn't a philosopher, but, you know, an important writer and political thinker, going at it with William F. Buckley or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Like, that shit just doesn't happen anymore. And I think that creates further insulation of, you know, philosophy and separates it from people who could be interested in it.
Yeah, I really think that academia in general could do itself some good by realizing that most of the world are non-academics, but that there are people out there who are interested in these questions still. That there's no reason, you know, there are plenty of smart people out there who aren't reading academic literature for very good reason, because it's dry.
Yeah.
And if people could write books, though, could write books about philosophy and approach these ideas, though, in a way that may appeal to some people outside of academia or outside of kind of academic journals and use language that could be more understandable, I think that you could do wonders for both the discipline of philosophy and any number of other disciplines.
But that's bled into literature, and even since then it's bled into television, it's bled into film, it's bled into film in a big way. It's bled into, like, television, True Detective. You can't say that True Detective isn't confronting big philosophical
questions.
Yeah,
and that's great. I think
it's fantastic, yeah. But it's still kind of not associated with the academic practice of philosophy, which is a problem. It's very distinct from one another. And I agree with you completely there.
I just think you're going to leave a lot out when you bring it down that far to that level.
You bring a lot out.
Is it
bringing
it down, though?
You bring a lot.
I mean, I think you should. You can definitely get the basic ideas out. Like, there's that book, like, The Garden of Sophia or something. It's like, it was the first book I read when I was like 12 or 13, and it's like an intro to philosophy, basically, about this girl, Sophia, who like travels around and meets all these philosophers and learns all the basic tenets of philosophy. And that was an easy introduction for me, and I got some of these basic ideas as like a kid, and it got me interested into mm-hmm. it. So I think you can do that. Like, obviously, I didn't get Heidegger from reading the book, but it got me interested into knowing what Heidegger was about.
And I think things like True Detective do the same thing. But the good thing about academic philosophy with citations is very kind of analytical approach. With citations, you're confronted with an idea, and you get where the idea potentially came from, and then you confront that. And that paper has all these different confrontations, all with these citations, which you can confront. And it's just like a kind of arborescent tree, which you can follow this kind of pathway which you want to follow.
Yeah, I guess the point that I'll take and that Quincy will take here is that it's good to find gateways into bigger philosophical problems. And something like True Detective might get you there.
But like to a point.
Yeah, yeah.
People will watch True Detective and they won't know where to go from there, and they'll potentially abandon it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so on that note, I am now parked, have been parked for 5 minutes in a now illegal zone. So, it's like the parking, the free parking. It ends at 11.
Oh, what?
So, I think we should put on some music so that I can run and move my car. and we'll get someone else to, run the boards and keep the discussion going. So what are we going to listen to, Blake?
All right, finally, our last track here is Arcade Fire, Afterlife, off their album Reflector, which came out last year.
Nice.
And shout-outs to Rowan for recommending the song.
Shout-out.
When love is gone, Join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the top floor of the Student Union building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
You are tuned into 24 hours of student power. It is 11:15, and we have been on the air. I mean, I haven't since 6 a.m., but Eleanor started the show at 6 a.m. How's it going?
It's
How
good.
Are you feeling?
I will make a brief correction. I actually started at 7.
Ooh.
That's okay.
That's okay.
It's still...
I mean, that's still, like, way too early for people to tune in on the radio. In, like, normally.
Yes. But it's good. It's been a long day. I was gone for a while, and I came back. Lots of different clubs through. We talked to, like, lots of interesting people. We had some solder students. We had ski and board, film sock, serp trap.
Emily.
I'm really stoked.
Emily, Radio.
That was really cool. Because Lauren and I had talked about that back in June at the NCRC.
That's sweet.
Campus Radio Conference.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's
radio
good.
On the radio. It doesn't mean anything.
Hey, what's your name?
My name is Nelly.
Oh my gosh.
You might recognize me from the Cat's Pajams every Friday from 11 to 12.
Yes.
PM. Yes. And then, yeah, and Eleanor's show.
AM.
Well, it's 12. It's 11 a.m. to 12 p.m.
Okay, but that's...
It's confusing. I never know what to say, like...
11 a.m. to 12 p.m.
Right?
Yeah. You just gotta be explicit.
But, like, when you end with p.m., it sounds like it's a late night show.
But it's almost 12 a.m. Oh, that's always weirded me out.
Yeah. But now I'm on from 11 p.m. to 12 a.m.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what show are you the host of, Eleanor?
I am one of the hosts of Femme Concept. Fridays from 1 to 2, all female content.
And Eleanor is also the president of the CITR Executive.
I am. Taking over the reins for somebody who was doing this time slot at this time last year. That would be Mr. Ryan Rosell.
Mr. Ryan Rosell.
Currently in Berlin. We miss you, Ryan.
We miss you, Ryan.
I wish you were here. But you're probably...
Ryan should call in. If you're listening, Ryan.
You would literally make...
Call in.
Everything.
Got a lot of time.
We just played a track by one of the best artists in Vancouver, in my personal opinion. One of the most entertaining artists in Vancouver. That would be Wet Face.
Wet Face. Jordan, what's his last name?
Minkoff?
Jordan Minkoff.
I think, yeah.
You might know him from Slam Dunk. Great band from Victoria.
And Babysitter.
Wet Face. That was a song, New Love. And yeah, he just released another track today, I think.
Yes.
I don't know. I wanted to play a funky, fresh tune to start things off, to kick off the student executive sleepover show. We got a lot in store for you tonight. We got some good tunes. Probably some interesting conversation.
Yes.
Got some pals hanging out at the station tonight.
Yes.
And yeah, who knows where the night will take us.
Whoever knows with Campus and Community Radio.
Should we play another track?
We should play another track.
Yeah, this is a late night show. It's a Monday night.
Oh, it's so weird.
Hopefully all you guys are ready to party.
Woo! Monday!
What are we going to play, Nelly?
We're going to play a track by another local band by the name of Watermelon. And this is a track called Silver Surfer. They released this off of a cassette compilation that Mint Records just put out. And yeah, I remember hearing this song played live and being like, oh, this is so good. I wonder when I can listen to this all the time. And now I can.
All the time.
All the time. So yeah, Silver Surfer by Watermelon.
So the wind shivers.
And we're back.
We are back.
And in addition to Eleanor and I, we've got some other people in the studio. Introduce yourselves. I mean, I would, but it's more fun to hear your voices.
I'm Joey.
And I'm Quincy.
Cool.
Hanging out.
We have concluded our interviews with other clubs and societies on campus, and now this is just the student executive hangover sleepout. Sleepover. Sleepover. I'm already can't do it.
I think we should retitle this.
Hangout sleepover.
It's 24 hours of student power. It should just be CITR's hangover sleepover.
I was trying to come up with like a really good hashtag, and then it was getting really too long, and then I just did. So you just heard a track by Watermelon.
Oh, so good.
Local favorite.
When was the last time you saw them? In the summer?
The last time I saw them was when they were playing right next door to when the Beelines were opening. Or no, the Beelines had their release show. And I actually did see like the last couple songs. And I saw that song, as I said before, yeah, I listened to that song live. And I wanted to hear it again. And now it's out.
Yay!
Hopefully they have like some actual stuff coming out, because that was just a song off of a cassette compilation that Mint Records just put out.
Lovely Mint Records.
Speaking of, this is a good segue.
Is it weird if you point out the segue, though? I always wonder about
it. It is,
that.
But, like, I was not anticipating the segue, so I was excited about it, so I just, you know, jumped
the
gun.
I do it all the time. It's
fine. You know, you want to, yeah. Mint Records just had their annual super early Christmas party. Is that what it's called? Ridiculously early Christmas party.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started listening to this band that was on Mint Records in the early 90s. And it's a girl group and they all actually met at CITR.
Yes.
And one of their brothers started Mint Records.
Mm-hmm. And they all, like...
That's how you get your, you know, that's how you get to put out your music.
It's actually,
Eleanor knows more about this. Yeah, Eleanor knows more about this than I do, because she just read that Mint Records book.
Fresh at 20. Yeah, no. It's weird. You just reading it was a bit trippy, because you hear about these people that like literally met sitting in the CITR lounge, like drinking beer from the beer vending machine. And I don't think that I was drinking beer when I met you, but I met you in the CITR lounge.
That's true.
Probably one of the first real conversations I ever had with you was drinking beer at a listening party in the CITR lounge.
Eleanor is talking to Eric and Nellie right now.
Sorry. Yes, for those of you.
And yes, no, totally true.
And it was just weird, because it was like, yeah, we just started talking and realized we had all these similar interests, and then these people went on to make a really sick band. I think they were one of the first signed artists to Mint, when Mint was like not a real... Well, they were real, but like...
Right. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, how do you get... your songs on a record label is like, you have a brother who has a record label, but how do you get any bands to be on your record label? You have a sister with a band.
Yes. Also, Nico Case played drums on some of the early recordings, who was also one of the first Mint artists. Whoa. So
that's really cool.
And yeah, I found their 7-inch in our record library, but the song I wanted to play that I thought was on it is not on it. So here's our dilemma, guys. Do I play a different song off of this, or do I play the song I wanted to play off the computer?
Both.
Both, yeah, why not? We have a lot of time. So I'm going to play a track that I think this is their most well-known track. Tough Age covered it at the Mint Records show.
So good.
Kate Nash covered it on that comp that Nardwar did.
Mm.
Anyway, it's called My Chinchilla. And this is by Cub. We'll be back.
John C?
Yeah, John C.
Satan sucks. You're the best. Holy smokes, you pass the test. When I'm with you, I feel blessed. Chinchilla. Satan sucks, but you're okay. Since you came, things go my way. Here. Everything was beautiful. My troubles had all fallen out the window.
We're talking about the Talking Heads. I wasn't fast enough to put the next song on the turntable.
Yeah, we were discussing if they're FemCon or not.
Does anybody want an educational lesson on what makes something FemCon?
I do.
Yeah, okay. Me too.
Is it just, do you have to have female vocals to be FemCon?
No.
Can you have female?
Fun fact.
Okay.
You can have no female singing in the whole song and it could be FemCon.
So what does qualify
there's
FemCon?
There's a criteria, right?
Yeah, there's four categories that makes any music Canadian content, and we follow the same ones for female content. So you have your music, so like guitar, keys, drums, whatever. You have your lyrics, that's a separate category. You have your producer, and then you have your performer. So two of the
but
four.
What about engineer?
I think that's under producing.
Okay.
I don't think we get that technical. I don't know. Anyways, so if you have two of the four, it's FemCon. So you could have a song written by a female and produced by a female, but sang by like a band of all dudes, and it would be FemCon. On the other side of that, you could have a female sing a song written, recorded, and produced by a man, and it wouldn't be considered FemCon because she's just the vehicle. Well,
but
she's not
the performer, right?
She's the performer, but she didn't write the music or the lyrics or produce it. Unless she did those things. But I'm saying if all she did was perform it, it's not FemCon.
Which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some debate over...
Well, this is an interesting segue into one of my favorite conversations. But how do we define art, guys? How do we no, seriously. How do we decide, though? Is it just because is the artist... The performer, if she's just... Yeah,
it's ascribing value to different
areas.
For
someone else's art, or is the artist the writer, even if... What the output is actually a set of his control.
Timeout.
Or their control.
Just before we get into that, I want to mention about the FemCon thing. I was talking to Sarah about it. And our music
coordinator.
Yeah, thank you. And she was... So I brought up the thing about, you know, the performer and, mm-hmm. like, gave the example of the Ronettes, right? Because, like, they didn't write any of their music.
Yeah.
At least not that I know. None of the big songs. Like, they're all mostly written and produced by Phil Spector. Yeah,
sorry.
I know. Creep.
With the afro?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Who murdered his second wife.
He's dead, right?
No, he's in jail.
Someone told me he died. I think he died. Someone told me he died. Maybe not. Anyways.
Well, anyways, the point is like, what she made the classification wasn't that, like, Ronnie Spector and the Ronettes, like, that their contribution to music was less so than... Let's say women who have written and, you know, produced the music that they're making, but that they were part of a music industry that still, to a large extent, and especially like in the 50s, viewed women as second-class citizens or second-class members of the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
So as you were saying, just sort of like voices to get out the sound that these guys wanted. So that's where the difference comes in, is that FemCon is a way of sort of dealing with this systemic issue that we have. And
it's weird though, because like I feel like I totally, like, no question agreed with that. And then I watched this film called 20 Feet from Stardom about backup singers
won the Oscar.
Right? Yeah, no, and it's really good. And a lot of it is like ladies that are, like, just, like, they didn't write anything, like, they're just singing it, but the argument that so many of them make is that, like, they bring the life to the song. It's like, what is the Stones song, the classic one?
Can't always get what you want.
No, that's a children's choir,
Sympathy
that one.
Sympathy for the Devil.
the one that's like, Rape Matter!
Give Me Shelter.
Thank you.
Like, just a child.
Yeah, thank you. That song. Okay, so the women singing in that, they didn't, like, you know, but it wouldn't be, they still, like, brought so much life to that, and they still, like, it wouldn't arguably be the same. And, I mean, even, like, Mick Jagger says in the film, he's like, it wouldn't be the same if it was me up there singing it, right? So then it's like, that's not FemCon, and I see why, but then it's like, does that mean we should just, like, neglect the contribution? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's
it's
just
not
the
as
issue.
Fucking white.
Yeah, yeah, that's the issue with, I think, like, any categorizing sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
We're going to come up with that. And, I mean, but the backup singers sort of goes to, like, a whole, like, fifth Beatle issue in music of, like, people who are underrepresented for their contribution, like, studio musicians in general.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, totally.
Which, like, to a large extent, backup singing is, like, very gendered.
whereas yeah. necessary, but I think it's part of like the whole like other people in the music, which isn't necessarily that gendered,
mm-hmm.
but it's like a larger disenfranchisement of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
But back to, should we answer the art question?
I was going
to
say,
we don't have to.
Can we ponder?
What's your answer, Joey?
I mean, yeah, I think it's, I mean, clearly it's a difficult question, which is why I like bringing it up so much.
Does it reveal things about people a lot?
Like, I don't know if it reveals, yeah, I mean, I guess so, it does. But yeah, so I'm going to have to backtrack a little bit here to think about what exactly my question was.
The question is, what is art?
Well, no, that's how I started.
How do we define art?
But also, I guess, what ultimately I was saying was that, is it the creative aspect of, you know, writing the songs, writing the lyrics, is that where the true artistic process is?
It comes down to the representation.
Or is the performance, though, art? Because, I mean, I think, you know, for instance, I think dancers are artists, even if they don't choreograph their own moves or their own set,
right
mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I think studio musicians are artists, even if, you know, I think classical musicians are artists,
yeah,
if they're playing Bach or whoever, you know.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, so isn't that kind of the same thing, though, that really I think that performance and interpretation really is an art in itself, and you don't have to be necessarily writing the songs. They're almost like different pieces of making music, mm-hmm. you know, or yeah. making mm-hmm. art.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. It just yeah, frick. Who knows?
Yeah, like you know the Pixie, I mean the TV on the Radio cover of Mr. Greaves by the Pixies?
I'm not familiar.
Okay, we should play that.
Let's play that. That sounds cool. Mr. Greaves is a great song.
No, it's amazing. It's like this doo-wop version almost,
mm-hmm.
and it's totally different. And I mean, there's like something to that because it's all performance. They didn't write the song or whatever.
Yeah,
but it's completely different.
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, covers are actually a great example of this because writing good cover music really is a skill and really is an art in itself. Like good, you know, translation of something of literature, you know, is an art. Like really, interpretation is quite an interesting art form, actually, I guess,
mm-hmm.
if you really
mm-hmm.
think about it. And yeah, making a good cover and making it distinctly yours while taking someone else's. Almost as inspiration is really cool.
Yeah, I love covers.
I think the mm-hmm. I think the reason that like they can be problematic is just the history of them, right? Because it's like when people did covers in like the 30s, 40s, 50s, so often people that were originally wrote it just got screwed, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and
Elvis.
Then so but now people yeah. yeah, right? And then now people get like it's way like people don't do them enough, I feel like. I don't know.
Alright, yeah. let's play that cover. And then I have also a really good cover that's completely different from the original that we should play after this.
Best.
Yeah, it's off their first EP,
Young
Wires.
Right? Yeah. Alright, TV on the Radio covering Mr. Greaves by the Pixies.
Da 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 da
And we're back. That was a band called Margie Pepper. They are from Washington.
Yes.
Seattle? Olympia?
I think it's Olympia. Ooh. I think it's Olympia.
It sure is.
Yes.
And that was their cover.
State capital.
Of ELO's Strange Magic. Can you believe it?
I can believe it.
And then before that, we played another great cover by TV on the Radio. That was The Pixies with Mr. Greaves. Mm-hmm. Or that was TV on the Radio with Mr. Greaves by The Pixies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're here as part of 24 Hours of Student Power.
Hanging out.
We've got Eric, Joey, Quincy, Eleanor, and me, Nellie.
We're chatting about rap.
We're chatting about rap.
Well, how did that even come up? We were talking about rap sampling?
Yeah, my friend at home, shout out to John, if you're listening, texted Quincy, I guess, actually, saying that we should transition, because we were talking about art before, that we should transition to talking about rap and sampling.
Sampling is art,
What do you guys think about sampling as an art form? Because I think it's really cool. I'm going to say right now that I love when I know, like, a certain thing from, like, either direction, I guess. If I know it from the original song or from, like, the hip-hop song, whatever it was sampled in, that it, like, clicks something for me. Like, there's this song by Atmosphere that samples a song by Albert King that every time I listen to either of those songs, YGZ by Atmosphere, and I can't remember the Albert King song.
Okay.
But...
I haven't listened to it. Okay.
John,
we can cue that up.
But, yeah, no, it's crazy, though, because it works so well.
Yeah.
I love both songs so much. And that's happened, like, a few times, though, with other songs. That's just an example. That's a really cool experience for me. And it brings to mind just how cool the idea of, like, choosing which aspect of a song you want to cut to use for, like, the base of another song
mm-hmm.
is a really cool, way of going about making music.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you guys think?
I couldn't agree more with that. Yeah, I just love it when I'm hearing a track and there's something I recognize. And I don't have to recognize where it's from, necessarily, but just... the fact that somebody's reappropriating the same feeling I had when I first heard that song, the original song. Like Cab Fare by Souls of Mischief samples the soundtrack from Taxi.
Okay.
Like the 70s sitcom. And yeah, I don't know. I just think it's fantastic. And they work with it. They always work with it so well. Whenever they sample something and it's recognizable, that I feel like they work with it fantastically well. Yeah.
It's great when people do, like, when they make clever samples, you know? And mm-hmm. you're like, oh, yes, this makes so much sense.
Yeah.
And people like J-Rock and Madlib, who take kind of, like, canonical soul or funk tracks and play with them so fantastically, yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the people who played Shindig sampled a bunch of old jazz stuff.
Yes.
And then played, nice. Like...
What was his name? Oh, Skim Milk. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's cool.
He played, like three different kinds of clarinets throughout that performance.
It was crazy.
Cool. Yeah, that was really cool, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He was definitely the underdog that week, I think, but he pulled through.
Yep.
Totally won. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I think sampling, like, fits into a larger art form of using, like, pre-existing art, right? So, like, example, like, lots of graphic art. And poster stuff, but, you know, like, collage in general. Even to an extent, like, I guess this would be more like a cover, but when you, like, do studies of other people's art.
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool, and I mean, like, you create something totally new with it each time, which I think is amazing. And I'm going to mention two Kanye samples. One which is great and one which is horrible.
Okay.
When he samples what's the Curtis Mayfield song?
Like the
big, the famous
Move On
song.
Up?
Yeah, Move On Up. He samples Move On Up in one of his songs, and I love Move On Up. I love Curtis Mayfield. It's a brilliant song. Mm-hmm. That song is perfectly written.
Touch the Sky?
Is that the Kanye
song?
Kanye.
Yeah.
Is that the sample?
Yeah.
Like it's
and I fucking hate it. It's so bad.
Everyone loves that
it.
Song, though. It's such a like catchy song because of that.
But it's not his best work, I would say.
No, it's not. But
it's not. But
it's
still.
It's just like it ruined it because it's just like it doesn't make sense to me in there.
And does it
However,
ruin the Curtis Mayfield song?
Yeah, when you hear the Curtis Mayfield song, you hear
still,
Kanye West.
Good. I don't listen to the Kanye West song because I don't want Curtis Mayfield to be ruined. But his sample of Nina Simone's Strange Fruit, or Nina Simone's version of Strange Fruit on Blood on the Leaves, where he distorts her vocals a little bit, is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like that, and that's my favorite song off of Yeezus. But it's just like that type of that is just like a brilliant example of sampling.
You know what his other best one is? All Falls Down. That's actually Lauryn Hill's original, like the female singing in that.
Really?
That's song cool. called Mystery of Antiquity. Antiquity? Is that a word? Something like that. I don't think it's her singing in his song, but she sang that piece originally. That blew my mind when I heard it because I totally heard the Kanye one first.
Yeah, it's just a matter of you hear these rap songs or you hear these kind of hip-hop tracks and then you look for the sample and it feels like a function of the fact that they're using a sample. You recognize that they're listening to this song and then you look to listen to this song and then you find this whole other kind of realm of artistry and you get so into it. I found so many great tracks through like looking at samples and listening to samples.
It's true, but there's almost even more. I'm thinking right now that Death Grips' newest album, which the name of which I don't want to say, I guess, actually right now, but but samples Bjork in every song on the album. Really? But if no one told you that, you wouldn't know they're sampling Bjork because it's so caught up that it just sounds like part of the production, and that occasionally you hear maybe it, like you could think, oh, that could be Bjork right now if you know it, but you don't know. But they said that Bjork is sampled in every album. It's just mixed in so weirdly, kind of, but it's weird natural voice. Because when you think about that, you do kind of hear it more if you listen to it. This is like a woman singing. It's just so modulated and changed right now to fit. And it's so, the context of it is so different. Like a Bjork song versus a Death Grips song is kind of so, you know, it's like on the opposite ends of the spectrum almost. But that's a cool aspect too, that you can take this and just make a beat out of it without someone, you know, without that being the original message at all, that you can totally subvert it and say, no, I'm just going to take what you made and shift it and use it and make it mine though. And that's like, that's just so strange, and it's such a cool way to make art though too, that we have access to now in this age of kind of digital production and stuff.
That also that made me think of like movie soundtracks when they like get an old, like some like classical song, or not classical song, but some great song, put it in the movie and you're just like, holy shit.
Yes.
Am I right? Like like in Dazed and Confused, when they play Aerosmith at the opening part. I don't like Aerosmith, but I love Aerosmith in that scene.
That's very true.
Recreating art on multiple platforms.
But even just the notion of like found footage, found kind of like text, which is used so much in all these different interdisciplinary art forms, it's dope, and it's a great kind of form of reappropriation, I think. It's, killer.
Wow. Do you guys mind if I go on a bit of a tangent here?
No.
Do it.
There's this really movie out there called Into the Realms of the Unreal, which is a documentary made about this this guy called Henry Darger, who wrote...
I love Henry Darger.
Yeah, actually, do you guys know the band Vivian Girls?
Yes.
That's Vivian based Girls. Off the work of Henry Darger, who wrote this... apparently, it's the longest book ever written, mostly because it's probably mostly nonsense. But he was found that he was a janitor somewhere, and he never released any of this art, but was writing this book about these Vivian Girls for a while, who are these kind of like hermaphroditic young girls who go on this crazy adventure, and he made all these watercolors to go with it. And there's this really cool movie out there called Into the Realms of the Unreal about this guy, Henry Darger, and about kind of found art and taking these watercolors and people animate them and people read over Henry Darger's actual writing over the movie. And this is a guy who never actually even meant for his art to be released, but who made it his entire life. Mm-hmm. And then it was kind of found and appropriated into this other cool film, which is nothing like the work itself, but takes the work and kind of makes it into an arguably better art form than whatever Henry Darger would have left it as.
Interesting.
And that's kind of like sampling.
Yeah.
That's quite... What's the movie again?
It's called Into the Realms of the Unreal.
How did... Was this guy, like, a hermit? Like, did he have friends?
Stumble? Like, watch the movie. Apparently, he worked at his job, and everyone said he was, like, a nice guy. No one really knew him.
Okay.
And then he died, and they found his apartment was full of this stuff that he'd been writing.
Weird.
And he wasn't, like... he was just kind of, like, a quiet guy who just devoted his life to writing this ridiculous story.
Right. Interesting. Very interesting.
It's a cool movie.
Should we segue into a set of songs that use good examples of sampling? I don't know.
Samples.
Samples. in songs. Yeah, well, starting with Blood on the Leaves, I guess. Yeah. That's what I have queued up.
Yeah.
And then we can go from there.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll be back to chat shortly. Here we go.
Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Blood on the leaves.
I just need to clear my mind now. It's been racing since the summertime.
Freeze.
Now I'm holding down the summer now.
Freeze.
And all I want is what I can't buy now. Cause I ain't got the money on me right now. And I told you to wait.
Freeze.
Yeah, I told you to wait.
Freeze.
So I'ma need a little more time now.
Cause
I ain't got the money on me right now. And I thought you could wait.
Freeze.
Yeah, I thought you could wait.
Freeze.
These bitches surrounding me.
Bodies.
Oh, want something now, man. Then they talk about me.
Freeze.
Would be lost without me. We could have been somebody. Thought you'd be different about it. Now
trees.
I know you not it.
From the poplar
trees. So let's get on with it. We could have been somebody. Said you had to tell somebody. Let's take it back to the first party. When you tried your first smile. It came out of your body. Before the limelight tore ya, before the limelight stole ya. Remember we were so young. When I will hold ya. Before the
flood.
I know you need
strange fruit.
Something strange happening
from the poplar tree.
You could have been somebody. We could have been somebody. Was it on the first party? When we tried our first Molly? It came out of our.